Between the Covers. I'm David Naiman, your host.
Out Loud is retiring in June, but queer programming will continue on your community radio station. KBOO is proud of our longtime support of programming serving and featuring the area's queer community, and while we prepared to say goodbye to Out Loud, we welcome the opportunity for new programs to continue airing in Out Loud's time slot every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. More information is available on the KBOO website at kboo.fm/outloud.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of One Flaming Arrow, an intertribal art, music, and film festival curated by RISE, Radical Indigenous Survivance and Empowerment. This event will take place from June 2nd through the 14th at Surplus Space and multiple venues within Portland, Oregon, Indigenous lands of the Chinook tribe. One Flaming Arrow seeks to evolve the dialogue of Indigenous survivance by introducing a biennial art, music, and film festival. The festival advocates Native expression of autonomy through the warrior spirit. It stands to disrupt the hegemonic white noise of contemporary culture by focusing on non-conventional exhibition spaces and non-neo-traditional Native artists. Spaces created for the radically political, experimental, and emerging. Surplus Space, located at 3726 Northeast 7th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. For more information, visit oneflamingarrow.com. Special thanks to PICA's Precipice Fund, Caligram Foundation, and the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts.
Open up the door and step inside.
Good morning, and welcome to the June edition of Black Book Talk. I am Patricia Welch, the Library Lady.
And O.B. Hill with Reflections Mirror Image Books.
And I'm a Jackson Ford Bookwoman. Okay.
And we are pleased to welcome to Black Book Talk Max Mantle, the author of Batty Boy. And I hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly. The B-W-O-Y put me off for a second. But is it Batty Boy?
Yes, it's Batty Boy, and it's Max Arthur Mantle.
Thank you. I had seen both versions. Well, welcome to the program. We are delighted to have you here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your book. Just give a little background for those audience members who are unfamiliar. Give some context.
Oh, absolutely. My book, Batty Boy, it's a coming-of-age story set in Jamaica and America. It deals with LGBT issues, and it's, the protagonist is a black gay Jamaican who is coming into terms with his identity, and he deals with socioeconomic disparities he faces in Jamaica, and which Jamaica is being a very homophobic nation. And he shoulders the issues of bullying and peer pressures and not necessarily fitting in, and he embraces these things and develops a thick skin. And he comes to America and comes out, but he comes out in a society where he feels disenfranchised and alienated. So the story pretty much looks at issues that are relatable to LGBT people across the board, where there is issues of isolation and neglect and just like trying to find yourself in the world. So my book deals with that.
Okay, I see that you went to Howard University and studied journalism and photography. Is that correct?
Yep.
And so the basis of this book is based on your background in photography?
No, it's based on my experiences as a black gay man of Jamaican born descent, and it's fiction, but it's colorfully, creatively laced with my personal experiences. So it doesn't touch on any photography. It touches on the life of a black gay person.
Okay, I'm curious. I think that the question that everybody wants to know is how much of this is your life, you know, is tailored to your life. Some people say it's purely fiction. Has I just made it all up, and then other people are like, I've drawn from, and then in other cases people will say it really is primarily my experience, I just did a fictionalized version. So which is closer to the experience here?
I think the latter. It's pretty much my experience in a fictionalized version, but it's like probably 95% accurately somewhat autobiographical, but it's still labeled fiction in the sense that some of the experiences are not my direct experiences. There are stories that I've bunched together, characters that I've created that are reflected in the people that I've met throughout my life.
Okay.
Do you want? Excuse me.
No. Go on, Emma.
What do you want the reader to take away from your novel?
Okay. I've been asked many times. I've written this as I've gotten a couple of reviews where it could be used, my book could be used as a social work medium where it pretty much lays the groundwork of giving you a raw taste of reality in terms of what to expect as a immigrant, a black man in America and also in Jamaica, and it just pretty much creates experiences where people will learn from the protagonist's experiences, where he's gone through incidences where he's succeeded and failed and tries again, and it's a true life replica of what people can endure. So I want readers to pretty much have an idea that it's relatable, and then they can see, okay, these are, especially young readers and people who have lived a little bit, they can see that, okay, this is really what they have had to deal with. And for the most part, hopefully they'll not make some of the decisions that the protagonist made, or hopefully they will. And it's just like a lesson, per se, of just like an enlightenment where the title of the book itself is a slur used in Jamaica. But I have reappropriated it, and I want it to be like reclaiming and empowering. So that basis is just for a political statement. It also like creates a discussion where maybe some light will be shone on the LGBT cause in Jamaica, or the harsh homophobia. And it also shows the realities faced as black gay immigrants in America.
There is this theme of coming to America, not just with Mark, but with his father, and then the mother comes here, and then Mark comes here. Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about the family situation for Mark, a little background about how things started out in Jamaica, and why everybody was coming to America?
Well, that's the reality with a lot of people of the diaspora. America is seen as the land, the promised land. So people want to migrate to America for a better life, trying to aspire through social mobility, either by work or education. So that's like a premise where a lot of Caribbeans, there are probably more Jamaicans in America than there are actually Jamaicans living in Jamaica. So there's a lot of immigrants that from Jamaica and the entire diaspora that come to America and the world in general, where it's perceived as that. And that's just like a put in the groundwork where Mark, his reality, the story gives a backbone of, the book gives a backbone of Mark coming into being. and his family is not necessarily ideal. He is born into a situation where his mother has to pretty much try and make a way by coming to America to seek a better life. And she meets her husband there in America, who also has gone for work. And it's just pretty much like showing where he eventually aspires for the same objective. So the coming to America story is a basis, but it's really like something that a lot of Caribbeans can relate to. A lot of people everywhere else can relate to.
Okay, the reason why I ask, I guess, is because, okay, the father comes over first, and yes, he's following this dream, and he's, you know, tells stories of, you know, almost like the streets are paved with gold. The mother comes over and finds out, well, not exactly, you know, and Mark is aware of this, and yet he too says, well, okay, this is going to be so much better than the situation that I am. It's just very interesting to me that whole theme of coming to America, which is also the title of a movie, and maybe that's it, but it just came to say, you know, there's the dream and then there's the reality. So, okay, yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I certainly know that this is still a mecca for immigrants around the world, but it was just interesting that father went, mother went, and now Mark comes over and everything is not as it would seem. It's not quite the dream. But I'm going to back
up. That's always the case, because a lot of people, I've been in America for 25 years, and I'm Jamaican born, but I've identified with everything that's American. I've lived here. So for a lot of people who have never been to America, all the stories that they've heard, they still hold on to it, even though it's not necessarily the truth. So it's still embedded in them, where until they actually come here and they realize, okay, it's not that. So it's something that's been going on for years.
Okay.
Well, how was Mark when he was introduced to the United States? And exactly where were they at in terms of entering this nation?
Well, Mark was introduced in a very idyllic situation, where in terms of his mother worked as a caregiver in Westport, Connecticut, which is, I think, the 1% of the country lives there. Mm-hmm. And she pretty much showed him, she was a help, but he was a kid, so he didn't feel like the help. He was going to these houses, these homes, these wealthy, everything. And in Connecticut, I mean, and then he pretty much saw it was like, well, the grass is really green on this side. So that was his initial introduction. So when he went back to Jamaica, he felt privileged. So that was his introduction. He didn't come to America like his father, who was in the slums in Hartford. He came in a very privileged state, even though he was not, but that's what he saw. So that kind of instilled in him an idea that, okay, America is the promised land.
Yes.
If we could go back to the time when you were a child, what kind of advice would you give to the teacher to help with the bullying?
Well, very often the teachers are not necessarily your parents, and for the most part, they pretty much stick to a curriculum that's like academic, and sometimes they overlook these issues and it's not brought to the forefront. And my advice would be like, children are so cruel. Well, children can be very cruel, and for the most part, they say things out of innocence which really damage a person through their years, as even when they become an adult. That's why so many adults are in therapy, because of their childhood. So I think teachers are one of the first initial socializing agents, where they should pretty much try and create a buffer against all these issues that will come about as you go into school and you have to relate with other people. And many often that they're not taught that. They're not social workers. They're not taught that. They're just taught to teach and collect a paycheck and a baby, and they'll, in the years later, they will be a role model. But for the most part, my advice for teachers, I mean, the teacher that I had, like, had a really major impact on my life was when I was a teenager, and he's still relevant to this day. He lives in London. We're not really friends, but we're in contact, but he's still relevant to this day. And I think teachers that have made a difference are always celebrated.
If you're just joining us, this is Black Book Talk. We are talking to author Max Arthur Mantle, and his new book is Batty Boy. Do you have a copy of your book handy? I think it would be great if you could read a passage from it, if you're prepared to do that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, now you're just shy. And yet I know that you are also coming to Portland in July. And,
yes, I'll be.
Okay, you're going to have to get over that shot. I'm sure there'll be a large audience of people, but I'll give you a second.
Oh, wow. Okay. I will be in Portland on July 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, and
I have actually prepared I have a copy of my book right in hand, and I've read a few excerpts. There's one that's posted on my website, maxarthurmanson.net. And as an author, it's something that's always a challenge in terms of trying to decide what do you really want to read to gain the reader's interest as a marketing or sales pitch. And I just think my recommendation is for readers to actually, if there's an interest, is for them to get a copy of the book themselves and read the novel to its fruition. And then they'll have a greater appreciation for,
now that
for,
is
my,
about the
for
smoothest.
My 4 years of work.
Well, I will say, and not a plug for the place where I work, but I do have to say that yes, you will be in town on July 14th, and it will be at 6 p.m. and it will be at the North Portland Library at Killingsworth and Commercial. And I'm not going to say anything more about that, but I certainly do want people to be aware that you will actually be here in Portland. If you
yes.
are still thinking about it, if you are looking for a passage, or if you will decide not to do it, there is another question that I do have. First of all, I want to say that we meet Mark at a young age, but, and of course, this is an issue that's of vital interest to a lot of young people, but is this like a young adult or a teen book? Would you say that? Because we always want to make sure that we are directing things to, you know, to the proper audience or the intended
it's
audience.
It's not a young adult book. It's written for a mature audience, a mature reader. It's an adult. It has adult content. But the thing is, it's a coming of age, so the initial chapters start in youth. But as the character develops, especially in the second part of the book, where he's in his 20s and he comes to America, and he's living in New York City briefly, he goes to college in Washington, D.C., and he experiences and explores the social context that he's involved in. It's of an adult nature. So it's not a youth-oriented book. It could be used in sections where it teaches youth, but it's not geared towards youth.
I would agree.
Okay. Well, in lieu of the fact that this controversy over the valedictorian coming out speech is going on now on national TV, this is Ivan Young, a high school student. Are you getting any feedback from that?
Excuse me, what is the controversy about that, OB, for those who haven't heard about it?
He is a gay high school student, mm-hmm. who was denied the right. They attempted to edit his work so that people wouldn't know that he was gay. So it's a big thing now.
Yeah.
And so this book comes at the right time.
Yes. Where is he? What city is he in?
Oh boy, where was he at now? This is. I'm
because
sorry.
Very often.
I can't remember exactly what city he was in.
And sadly, I don't think this kind of thing is not restricted to any particular cities or any geographic area, even now. that's worth.
Well, he has made a strong step, especially as a youth in terms of making his truth be known and trying to put some attention to that. And my book, I think, will endorse that in many regards, because it's the protagonist, he is not in the closet. He's a young boy who is very much aware of his reality and his identity. And as a youth, he's a sissy boy. So his sexual activities are, well, his identity and sexual orientation are not addressed until he's older. But his identity as a person and his feminine ways or his identification with being gay is not in any stage where he's in the closet. What he does is that he's fearful of his life in Jamaica. So he guards that, and he's very reserved because of the climate he's in. But when he comes to America, he embraces himself. He expresses himself. He's not on a DL or anything, and he celebrates himself. And that could be something where the valedictorian shares, because he also embraces himself. And it's something where, in this time and age, like you said, in any city, those things, I mean, gay LGBT people are coming into the forefront in terms of making their issues known, and it should be a matter of respect and tolerance. And I'm in New York, I'm on my book tour now, and I haven't experienced any kind of, well, growing up, per se, in America, I've lived in major cities, and I haven't necessarily experienced any direct hate. And I just think, well, but I know the issues and the causes and everything that are at stake in terms of making yourself known at a young age. So for the most part, I applaud his stance.
So this was your first book. Do you have another one in mind?
Yes, it's a trilogy. Okay. This is my first book, and the second book is already, the manuscript it has been completed, but it needs work. And it's going to be a continuation. The first book ends, it doesn't end in a cliffhanger per se, but it's really, when it's read, it's like, okay, what else is going to happen? What is next? So it leads you into the idea that there will be a second book and a third book. So that's my goal.
You know, for a lot of us, our image of Jamaica is, you know, Bob Marley and Rastas on it. You know, and I'm just interested in learning a little bit more about the realities of Jamaica. One thing that was interesting to me is that even though Mark absolutely felt that he was endangered and that he had to protect himself just from other people, that there was still a part of him that felt very privileged. And I don't know to what extent that was hinged on the fact that he was maybe not pale skin, but still light enough skin, so that in a situation where color is important, that becomes an issue. But, you know, I just thought that this self-confidence and in some cases a feeling of like slight superiority probably served him well. But where that was coming from, I mean, is that a part of the culture of Jamaica?
Well, Jamaica's culture is a predominantly black nation. You're grown into a society where you're identified first with being black. So you see black politicians, black everything. Everyone who runs the country, the teachers, all the role models are black. But the classism is embedded in the nation, where if you are of a middle class, upper middle class, elitist status, as with everywhere else, you're treated differently. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily your skin color, but for the most part, with the legacy of colonization, the lighter you are, you're more likely to be more of a better social economic status in Jamaica. And for the most part, a lot of growing up in Jamaica is not necessarily a racial conflict per se, but it's always like a class issue. So you have those issues that are brought to the forefront. And Mark felt privileged in the fact that he wasn't necessarily of a better class, But the fact that he used his education and the fact that he could come to America at a young age where his neighbors could not, he felt privileged. So he used different methods to make himself feel more self-confident and to get a thicker skin against whatever hate he embraced.
Good. Okay. I'm curious, would you say that things are better in Jamaica now for the LGBT community? I mean, certainly in this country, clearly there have been tremendous strides. Yeah. There's still areas where people still hold on to their own beliefs, but certainly in America, there have been tremendous changes in attitudes. But since you have left, has Jamaica improved in this area?
There have been improvements, but it's not across the board. If you go on holiday to Jamaica as an LGBT person, your U.S. dollar or English pound makes a difference. So you can go to a resort and you have a wonderful time. Jamaica is a beautiful country, in every regard. So you can have a wonderful time, and the fact that you're a tourist, you're tolerated. And openly, if you're an openly gay tourist, you are tolerated. But but for the everyday man on the street in Jamaica, mm-hmm. being a gay person is something that could be a death sentence. And that's the reality.
Really, a death sentence. You are not exaggerating. A death sentence.
I am not. You can be killed if you are openly gay and you express any kind of quote-unquote gay tendencies, walking down the street with someone. That's the spoken a whole kind of world where it's not just like a hateful stare. You can be mobbed, a gang mob. I mean, and that's like very often stuff like that is brought to the news. Time magazine years ago named Jamaica as one of the most homophobic nations in the world. And there are things that are being done. There are grassroots LGBT organizations like the JFLAG and others, but they're all on the ground. There's no visibility. The few people that are out there in their gated community, in their cars, they stay in their homes. And, I mean, one of my peers, he's a very active gay LGBT activist, and he had to leave Jamaica to seek asylum in Toronto because of the death threat. So that's the reality.
Well, is this based on religious background, or it's a former colony of what nation?
Well, Jamaica is a British colony, but the thing is, the hate is taught in the fundamental Christian belief, where they use religious verses to tailor and to preach their hate. And Jamaica is in the mentality, the culture is in a basic stage where they can't even perceive of the idea of being gay. And it's not even where in America the political agenda is gay marriage. Jamaica is still in the elementary stage of being considering somebody being gay as being not psychologically deranged. So there's a lot of ways to go before any level of similarity with the LGBT cause in America is equated with the ones that people face in Jamaica.
Well, the answer to that question was an eye-opener, and actually this whole interview has been. I encourage those who want to learn more, one, to get the book, Batty Boy, but and also to come out and meet the author on July 14th. And Max Arthur Mantle, we thank you for joining us today. We hope that you will let us know when your next book is released so we can invite you back for another interview. But thank you for being with us at Black Book Talk today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your support.
Wonderful. We look forward to meeting you. And to our audience, just want you to know, okay, June, besides being Gay Pride Month, is also Black Music Month. So we want you to go out and support Black musicians and listen to some great music, get some great books on both topics. And we also want you to know that June is Juneteenth. The month of Juneteenth, the celebration of Black liberation. I'm sure that there will be celebrations around the city on June 20th on the Emmanuel Hospital field. I think starting at 11 o'clock in the morning, there'll be a large community celebration. There'll be historical figures, people dressed as well-known figures in Black history. and that's on Russell Street between Williams and Vancouver. And the day before the actual day of Juneteenth, which is June 19th, there'll be the opening program at the North Portland Library starting at 6 o'clock. And we will once again have excellent musicians. I don't know, those of you who know Eugene Lewis, who has a fabulous voice, he'll be singing. We have members of Passing Art Theater Group who will be giving the history of Juneteenth. And of course, there will be an ice cream social at the end. So we hope to see you in the backyard of the library at 6 p.m. Have a great June, everybody. This is Patricia Welch signing off.
And O.B. Hill with Reflections Mirror Image Books.
And Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good reading to you.
See you next month.
Okay.
This is the KBOO News at noon. Today is June 4, 2015. Oregon Governor Kate Brown says that the state IT worker who leaked former Governor John Kitzhaber's emails should not be prosecuted. Michael Rogers is on paid leave after leaking Kitzhaber's emails to the Willamette Week. Kitzhaber resigned in October. Rogers is still facing an Oregon State Police investigation, and authorities may still prosecute or fire him despite Brown's opposition. In national news, the Obama administration has unilaterally expanded NSA spying on Americans' internet history. The New York Times reported this morning that the Justice Department secretly gave its support to the policy in mid-2012. The NSA has been looking for hackers by monitoring internet traffic that could be linked to foreign governments. This comes on the heels of the USA Freedom Act passed